Blog Talk Radio.
Neighborhood, and whosoever shall be found
the soul for getting down. Must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. Funk of 40,000 years and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver, for no mortal can resist the evil of the thriller.
Good evening and happy Halloween, motherfuckers. This is Raven Real Spill Radio. This is Raven the Serial Pug coming to bring y'all another show. This is the last show. We made it, y'all. This is the last show of the 31 Days of Horror. Some of y'all thought I couldn't do it. Some of y'all thought I couldn't stay consistent. But I did, y'all. So boo y'all. But anyway, tonight, y'all already see we starting things out different. You know, the stories is about to be 10 times more, you know, spine chilling. It's probably going to have y'all up all night. But that's okay. Y'all going to be up all night eating candy anyway. So it's cool. But if you want to tune in, the number is 914-205-5813. That number is 914-205-5813, and if you're listening to the playback, you'll greatly appreciate it. So let's get into the show. Let's go, y'all.
This happened about 5 years ago when I was 21. Me and my friend Seth got into this app, which showed you ghosts. We'd go out ghost hunting, but nothing much would happen. Sometimes a dot would appear on one of our phones and it would say random words. We would ask, how did you die? And stuff like that. And sometimes the answers lined up, but it was mostly random. One night, around 2 a.m., Seth suggested going to the cemetery to see if the app picked anything up. I was hesitant, but I nervously agreed. We started making our way through the neighborhood towards the cemetery. It was weird as the streets are normally lined with cars, but they were empty on this night. We walked down the middle of the road with the app running, but it wasn't picking anything up. We finally made it to the cemetery, which was a small, family-owned one where they only buried their own. Seth went up to the gate and started shouting, hoping to get a response on the app, but nothing happened. I was standing in the road, feeling unsettled, when Seth starts yelling,
"Is that all you've got?"
I told him to stop disrespecting the dead and we should leave. He tried being funny, saying,
"Oh, I'll make him show up."
And jumped the gate and started stomping on the graves while screaming,
"Come on, show us something."
All of a sudden, our phone said something at the same time. I looked down at my phone and it was there. We both just stood there, looking at each other when 10 or so red dots appeared on the radar. And it said it again. When I looked back up from my phone, Seth was next to me. I said,
"We have got to go."
As soon as I said that, we could hear the street lights turning off one by one from the top of the street, getting closer to us. We took off running as fast as we could. We got about halfway into the neighborhood before running out of breath and having to stop. I felt like I was going to throw up from being scared and winded. Then I heard my phone say something. It was muffled, but I knew what it said. Being too scared to look at my phone, I looked at Seth, who looked terrified. He nodded at me to get my phone out, so I slowly pulled it out, and it said my name across the top. I turned my phone off and said,
"Screw this. I'm done."
We made our way back to my house and had a cigarette to calm down. We were talking about what just happened, almost not believing it, when I heard my phone again. This time, it was my sister's name. We just stood there, frozen, not saying a word, when it went off again and said my brother's name. I took my phone out, turned it on, and deleted the app. I asked Seth to stay the night, but he refused. I can't blame him. When I finally got to sleep that night, I dreamt a muffled voice repeating a word over and over. I started to wake up and the words became clearer. My phone was off, with the battery out. But when I turned it over, it was lit up with the app running. It had a red dot about 6 feet from me, still repeating. I woke up the next morning and went to the bathroom. I had a razor-thin cut from my left shoulder to my right hip. I don't know what happened that night, and nothing has happened to me since. Needless to say, I don't mess with that kind of stuff anymore.
Over the weekend, about 15 co-workers and myself had our company trip to the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, known for being Stephen King's inspiration for The Shining. We took an 8 p.m. ghost tour where we joined about 15 other people to get guided around the property and told stories about its history and creepy things that are said to have happened. We were told to take a lot of pictures, I'm sure to try and capture orbs or ghosts. Many green orbs were caught in pictures, but I don't think anything is as creepy as this photo taken by my coworker. A little girl in a hot pink dress who was definitely not on our tour. And apparently, years ago, a young girl who was 12 to 13 by the name of Lucy was squatting in the basement of the concert hall, which is where this photo was taken, and she was discovered upon plans to begin some construction. She was forced to leave, and the night got below freezing, so she froze to death. Everyone on my tour has vouched that this girl was not on our tour. I mean, who wouldn't remember someone wearing hot pink? The man pictured as our tour guide, no one would have been in front of him. I am convinced that this is the ghost of Lucy. Just one more added note, though I doubt anyone would believe me. But there was only one time throughout the tour where I felt any strange energy or feeling, and it was right there, headed down to the basement of the concert hall.
War!
What's that? Plain white sauce? Plain white sauce makes your teeth go gray!
This happened a few weeks ago when I was walking home from school, excited that my freshman year was coming to an end. It was a Tuesday night when I was turning in my last essay for history. I left it to the last minute, and the teacher actually made me complete it before I could go home. I hated my teacher for that. Around 8 p.m., I had finished that goddamn essay and was walking home. The rain had stopped, and there was a beautiful sunset. Suddenly, I noticed something. There was a red 2016 Toyota Camry right behind me. I got goosebumps thinking it was following me. I didn't look back and started walking in my apartment's direction. I wanted to go to a busy road to feel safer. Just then, the car sped up, stopping right next to me. A middle-aged man asked me where I was headed and suggested to drop me off. I said no thanks, but the man wouldn't leave and insisted. I wanted to tell the man to just fuck off, but I took off running instead. I heard a loud noise and at the same time felt something I can only describe as a sharp vibration hitting my flesh. I fell to the ground not knowing what happened. Out of adrenaline, I was about to get up and run again as I felt a heavy arm grab me by the mouth. Then the pain set in. I realized that I was shot. There was another man next to him that searched my pockets. He grabbed my phone and threw it on the ground, as he tied my legs and taped my mouth. They quickly put me into the trunk of their car and then started driving. I could feel that we were going very fast, and I'm sure that we hadn't stopped at all for a good 30 minutes. I was feeling my blood soaking into my shirt, which scared me the most. I was certain that I was going to die. I was thinking about my parents and what they would feel when they heard that I was missing. Then the car came to a stop. By some miracle, I heard a police officer asking for IDs and driver's licenses. I wanted to yell for help, but nothing came out. Just then, I heard 3 to 4 gunshots. I heard another cop yelling,
"Man down! Man down! Shots fired!"
I was begging the cop to find me. Then I heard the cop searching the car. I was feeling joy as my pain was growing worse. Seconds felt like hours. The officer then opened the car's trunk and suddenly started firing at me out of a fight or flight response. Thankfully, the bullets missed. The officer quickly caught up to the fact that I was kidnapped and injured. He called for backup immediately, and it arrived in minutes. They placed the injured officer onto a gurney and drove off in an ambulance. Finally, when the scene was safe, they called another ambulance for me. I woke up in the hospital. The news media was everywhere. I was fine after a few days, but later learned that the officer that was shot didn't make it. I don't know if those men are still alive or rotting away in a prison for killing an officer. I don't want to know what would have happened if those officers hadn't stopped the car. This happened when I was 17 years old. I would go to the gym 3 to 4 times a week and ride the bus home. It was a Sunday and I had just missed my bus, so I had to wait longer for another one. I would have called my parents, but they were out for the evening, and taxis charged more, so I decided to sit and wait in the bus shelter. It was a cold night and snow had just started peppering the ground. My bus was taking longer than usual, so I got my phone out and listened to some music. Almost an hour had passed. It was freezing and I hadn't seen anyone at all. That was until I noticed something out of the corner of my eye. It was a creepy guy dressed in thick layers of clothing, walking slowly towards me. I knew staring at him would draw more attention, so I just focused on my phone. He sat down at the other end of the shelter and just stared at me. There was something off about him. He seemed like he was either drunk or on drugs. He then asked,
"What does the boss do?"
I took out my earphones and said,
"I think it's delayed because of the snow."
He stared at me for a while, then started mumbling to himself. He was really starting to creep me out, so I pretended to be on my phone. After a couple of minutes, I took another look. He moved closer to me. I looked away for a second, then heard the sound of him sliding even closer. I turned to him and said,
"You okay there?"
He stared at me with glossy eyes, lifted his arm, and leaned towards me. Immediately, I grabbed my bag and ran as he fell to the ground. I ran down the road, trying my hardest not to look back. I kept going until I got to the next bus stop. I turned around to check to see if he was there. He was gone, so I went to sit down. Feeling relieved, I rested my head on the back of the glass and waited for the bus. I jolted and turned around to see the same guy staring at me through the glass.
"What the hell is wrong with you?"
Then he started walking around the shelter towards me.
"I'm warning you, stay back!"
I yelled in panic as I was backing up. I wanted to run, but I left my bag in the shelter and I couldn't leave without it. Suddenly, the man leaped at me and I quickly moved out of the way. He fell to the ground face first. I froze in shock, then noticed the blood coming from his face. I tried to get a response out of him, but nothing worked. I called the police and paramedics, and they arrived shortly after. I told them what had happened, and they told me that the guy was on prescription drugs. They found a photo in his wallet of him and his son. The boy looked just like me, so we assumed he thought I was him. I later learned that he had lost his son in a custody battle and went off the rails. He was taken away for treatment. That was the last I saw of him. I got my driver's license shortly after, and have never been on a bus since. It was November of 2006. I was a 16-year-old kid living in the town of Altoona, Iowa. I went to bed early one night because I had to work the early shift at McDonald's. As I slept, I had a dream that I was running through downtown Des Moines, but I wasn't on a jog. I was running from something. As I ran around the corner of a building, I came face to face with my pursuer. A tall man wearing a trench coat and a top hat stood in front of me. The only thing visible of his face was his eyes. They were abnormally large with black pupils, and it looked at me as if it wanted something. After what felt like hours, he reached out his bony hand, as if he wanted me to go with him. I woke up violently from my dream, and after catching my breath, I peered around my room to see if I was safe. As I stood up from my bed, I noticed that I could see my breath. Feeling confused, I checked my window. It was latched shut. I then walked over and checked my vent. I could still feel warm air coming from it. As I sat back down on my bed, I tried to figure out what exactly was going on. That's when the figure from my dream appeared at the foot of my bed. I scrambled back to my headboard.
"What do you want?"
I asked, trying to hide the shakiness in my voice. With the same bony finger, it pointed at me. Growing up in a religious home, I believed what I was looking at was a demon. I told the creature to leave. It just waved its finger at me, and with a low voice, it spoke to me.
"Never leave. Always here."
The creature then screamed loudly and disappeared. A feeling of nausea came over me, and I vomited on my floor. The last thing I remember was cleaning myself up and waking up to my alarm. It's been about a month since I had seen the top hat-wearing man in my bedroom. The Christmas season was in full effect. My parents weren't home because they got invited to some kind of event, so it was only me and my three sisters at home. I had to wake up early in the morning for work, so I decided to go to sleep. I rested my head on my pillow and closed my eyes. Not even 30 seconds passed until my sisters burst into my room and started singing obnoxious songs. This, of course, made me very angry, but I thought if I ignored them that they would leave me alone. This was not the case. As I pulled the blankets over my head, I started to feel the same cold feeling that I had in November. As the obnoxious singing subsided, I lowered the blanket below my eyes and saw the man standing in the corner of my room. In one swift motion, he charged towards me, and I blacked out. When I finally came to, I found that my sisters had locked themselves inside the bathroom. As I knocked on the door, they told me to go away. I asked them what happened, and all they could say was Mom and Dad were on their way home. I looked down and saw that my hand was slightly bloody. Holes were in the bathroom door, and a broom was sticking out of the wall. I then walked into the living room and found that there were knives stuck into the wall as well. The same wave of nausea passed over me, just like in November, and I threw up again. As I was cleaning up, my parents walked through the door. My father immediately walked over to me and gave me a good beating. Then he sent me to my room. I went to bed crying. Not from the beating. I was crying because of the confusion. I had no idea what was going on. The next morning, my sisters reluctantly sat next to me and told me what had happened. They said I got angry and chased them down and tried to hurt them. They said my eyes were red to the point where they thought I was bleeding from them. They said I sounded like a different person. In 2011, that was the last time I saw the top hat wearing man. I'd just moved into a new apartment, and after a long, stressful day of unpacking, I took a shower and got ready for bed. As I started to drift off, I could feel that cold feeling again. I lifted my head and saw the man standing in front of me. The man's eyes were red now. With a low voice, just like on that November night, it looked at me and said,
"Never leave. Always here."
During my holiday, I spent about 3 weeks in Japan. I arrived pretty late, so I couldn't check into the hotel that I initially booked, so I booked the cheapest hotel that I could find nearby. Aesthetically, it was quite nice, but it did have easy access to the building, meaning anyone could come in and go to any room as they please, plus there was no security in sight. After arriving in my room, I ordered some food and watched some TV. I was still pretty jet-lagged from the flight, so I started to get ready for bed. As I was falling asleep, I felt the urge to double-check the door just to see if it was locked. I didn't think anything was going to happen, but I'd rather be safe than sorry. About 5 minutes after I checked the door, I heard footsteps outside. Initially, I thought it was someone leaving their room, but the footsteps started to pick up speed. The sound started getting louder and louder, and I started to freak out a little. All of a sudden, the sound stopped. I looked at the light shining through the bottom of my door, and there was a shadow of a person. At first, I thought it was room service, but it was too late for that. Or maybe it was some drunk idiot who was at the wrong room. As soon as I switched my light on, the shadow disappeared. I was confused, but I reluctantly went back to bed. That's when I suddenly heard scratching coming from my door, so I immediately turned my light on and shouted,
"Who's there?"
After a moment of silence, I heard the footsteps slowly fade away. At this point, I was thinking it could be some kids messing around, so I got up, opened the door, and peeked my head outside. I glanced in both directions down the dark and slim hallways. That's when my heart stopped. A man emerged from the darkness and ran erratically towards me. His face was contorted as he screamed, and I could see he was holding a knife in his right hand. As he got closer, I could see him more clearly. He had disgusting long, dirty hair, his clothes were ripped, and he had cuts and bruises all over. I quickly slammed my door and pressed against it, praying that the man would just go away. After what felt like hours, I finally gathered my courage and looked through the peephole. He was gone. I let out a sigh of relief and checked the peephole again. My heart started pumping faster than ever before. He was right in front of the door. He was wearing a maniacal smile on his face, and all of a sudden he raised his knife and yelled,
"I'm gonna fucking kill you!"
I jumped back and kept my eyes locked on the bottom of the door as I backed up to my bed. I grabbed my phone and started dialing the police. As I raised the phone to my ear, I saw that the shadow was gone. When the police arrived, I tried to explain what happened, and they checked the security cameras. They almost immediately recognized the man. He had been doing this to people for a while now, and the police had been trying to track him down for months. After a long night of no sleep, I finally arrived at the right hotel that I had booked initially in Tokyo. That creepy guy was still on my mind, but I thought the chances of him being here were pretty slim, so I didn't bother locking my door that night. At 12:05 a.m., I woke up to a big bang next to me. I turned around to see the same guy passed out on the floor, with a knife in hand. I was in shock. How did he find me? I quickly ran out of the room and locked him inside. The cops came and he was finally arrested. Let's just say I'm always going to be locking my doors from now on. I was 26 years old, and I was unemployed. Feeling unfulfilled by the monotony of a job life, I decided I would try my hand at working from home. So my days and nights comprised me surfing the internet for any jobs I could get. I was a big procrastinator, so more often than not, I'd stray away and waste time doing other things. One day, I came across talk about the deep web while on Reddit. I felt amused by the people talking about it as if it was something so scary, and decided I'd look into it. It was stupid of me to go on it in the first place, but I made it even sillier by deciding to check it out late at night. It was about 2 a.m. and I came across a website where you could chat with someone anonymously. The person I got was a woman. She was in her early 20s and very pretty. She sat with her head in her hands, looking playful into the webcam while batting her eyes. I had no desire to turn my camera on and started our chat, thinking that while I didn't come across anything scary, I could befriend this pretty girl. It sounded like a better deal anyway. She told me to turn the camera on, but I ignored that request and tried to get her to talk. She finally did after some prodding, but I noticed how guarded she was. I also noticed how after every message I sent, her eyes would look off camera, either to her side or somewhere behind her computer. After a while, it started getting annoying, so I asked her if someone else was there with her.
"I want to see you first,"
she said. Up until now, I'd been chatting while she'd answered my questions verbally.
"I'm not that curious."
"Don't be scared,"
she said, laughing. This time looking behind the laptop again and making a face that seemed to indicate she was laughing at my expense with someone else.
"This is getting boring. It feels like I'm not just talking to you."
"That's because you're not. You're talking to all of us."
"Who else is there?"
"Turn your camera on."
"Is this a joke?"
"Turn it on."
"Okay. I'll be leaving now."
"Turn on the camera."
Her laughter was almost piercing by now. There was nothing humorous about the situation, yet she threw her head back with riotous laughter. I'd had enough and moved the cursor over to turn the chat box off when I saw the cursor had jammed. The only thing that was working was the chat box, and I still had access to the keyboard.
"Turn the camera on, sweetie."
Her gumdrop-filled voice was louder than before, and I moved my gaze up to see her smiling toothily at the camera. Her face still beautiful, but the smile completely fake.
"My computer's crashed. I can't see the screen. Sorry."
I lied. I didn't want her to know I had no option but to chat. Her screen flashed before going blank. There was nothing there but a black screen. I felt relieved, thinking that at least I didn't need to talk to her while I tried to figure out what happened to the screen. Just then, a chat message popped up.
"Open the damn camera, you..."
The aggressiveness in the message frightened me. Now, the fact that I couldn't see her face while she typed this made me feel nervous. I didn't dare reply back, but then the cursor moved. I watched shell-shocked as the cursor twirled around the screen.
"Open the camera now."
I still didn't make a move. There was no way anything good would be waiting for me if I did what she asked. The screen began flickering, as if a virus was causing the computer to writhe in agony.
"Do you want me to find you?"
My heart raced. Could it be possible she knew where I was? I started typing.
"Please stop bothering me."
"Then turn on the f***ing camera."
By this point, I thought she was some kind of sadist, and got her kicks by scaring unassuming people in chat rooms. So I obliged and turned the webcam on. I saw my frightened face staring into the screen. Judging by my face, my attempts at looking tough were painfully unsuccessful. I asked around for the girl looking straight into the camera, telling her I did what she wanted and to stop hacking into my computer. There were several seconds of silence. I kept my stare directed to the little box that showed her camera feed, but it was pitch black. I motioned into the camera in confusion, feeling as if she was messing with me now. Then, I saw another message.
Look here.
After a few seconds of staring at those words, I looked back at her camera, but my computer instantly malfunctioned, and I received another message.
Look here. Don't look up.
The chat was filled with nonsensical gibberish. She typed with such ferocious speed, my screen whirled away with her constant messages. I couldn't understand what was going on, but I didn't look up. My patience ran thin, and I wrote back.
What is this supposed to mean?
Her response came. I read only the letters in bold and shuddered. I looked back into her webcam, and I fell back into my chair, my eyes widening. She was back there. Only her face looked completely demented. She had a savage expression, devoid of emotion. But her eyes were almost popping out of their sockets, and she was huffing as if she had extreme amounts of pent-up rage. The way she looked directly into the camera made me feel she despised me with all of her being. There was no amusement there anymore. Her camera went blank again. Then the chat popped up. My heart stopped again. For a split second, there had been the same blackness, only for the lights to come back on. She wasn't alone anymore. There was a man next to her with a black mask on. He made no movements other than look into the camera like the girl. The girl's neck creaked to her side. It looked like it was causing her pain. And then the lights went out again. The chat resumed. This time, I screamed in fright and fell off my chair. There was another man with them now. He was standing next to the girl with the original one on the other side. This man had the same mask on, but his hands were grasping the girl's shoulders. Even with the subpar quality of the webcam, I could see the force with which the man dug his hands into the girl. It looked like he could rip her in two. The girl, however, had a huge grin on her face. Her eyes were mad with glee, or so it looked. Her teeth were perfectly lined up as her mouth spread into that toothy grin. But I could see she was in pain. Even with the smallest sign of her smile fading, the man clenched his hands even tighter than before, which made her smile even wider. All three of them were shaking, as if it was extremely cold where they were. After a couple seconds, I realized they were shuddering, like trying to hold back laughter.
What are you laughing at?
I yelled into the screen. They didn't answer, and continued to tremor with concealed hilarity.
What is so damn funny?
I bellowed. They stopped shaking. Within a couple seconds, the screen went black again. When it turned back on, the man no longer grasped the girl's shoulder. Neither was she smiling. All three pointed into the camera. Upon a closer look, I understood that they weren't pointing at me. They were pointing behind me. I didn't need to look back. I could see myself in the webcam. There was someone peeking from behind me. It was another man in a mask. And according to what I saw in my webcam, he was with me in my room, right behind me. I turned around quickly, but saw nothing where I had seen him in the webcam. I turned back towards the screen and, to my bewilderment, saw a third man in the girl's chat box. He was the same man I had just seen standing in my room. Now, all three had their hands on the girl and were gripping tight. The girl wasn't laughing anymore. She had a look of utter devastation. A tear was dropping from her eye. But it wasn't just a tear. It was blood trickling down her eye socket. She then mouthed the words, "Help me," and the next second she screamed as if her lungs were being ripped off as the screen went black. I immediately got up and pulled the plug out of my computer and backed out of the room. For a couple seconds, I swear I heard her screams, even though the computer was unplugged. The room went quiet, but I was too devastated to stay there, and ran out of my house despite it being 3 a.m. I caught a cab and went over to my friends, who had to talk me down for an hour before I could be calmed. I returned back to my house with my friend a day later. Everything was the same. And after thoroughly checking around the house, we concluded that there was no one there. Nor was there a sign of anyone ever having broken in. I've never gone back to the deep web. My friend suggested it might have been some prank by computer hackers, but the way that girl shrieked, the terror she had on her face, it convinced me she had been a victim herself. I had wondered if I had stayed on for longer, if I would have become a victim too. Could those men have found me? Was there really someone in the room with me? There was nothing I could do, because there was nothing concrete to report to the police. What I did do was throw the computer out and buy a new one. There was no way I could even open it back up after what happened. It was an early morning. My campus didn't offer housing and I lived about a half a mile from school, so I started my journey as usual while playing on my phone. I glanced up to see an old man heading towards me on a bicycle. Normally, I'd step aside to let bikers and skaters pass, but he braked instead. I stopped too, wondering if there was something wrong. He walked up to me and said,
"Don't worry, I'm not gonna hurt you."
I felt chills instantly. I didn't know what to think. I just looked up at him with a fearful and confused expression. I was gathering up the courage to tell him that I was late for class and I should go, but before I could say anything, he said,
"Get off the grass!"
Looking down, I noticed I'd stepped over towards the road and onto the grass. I stepped off slowly and he said,
"You wouldn't want to step on any bugs or get your shoes dirty now, would you?"
He raised his finger and asked me what my name was. I told him, and he replied,
"Don't worry, I'm not gonna hurt you."
The same chills ran through my body again, but before I could say anything, the man said,
"Get off the grass! You wouldn't want to step on any bugs or get your shoes dirty now, would you?"
I looked down to see that I was back on the edge of the sidewalk again. This had to be deja vu. He asked for my name once more. I said my name again, but he interrupted me before I could finish. He told me his grandchildren are down the road and needed gas money. I told him I didn't have any spare change or any change at all for that matter. He continued to ask me again and I gave him the same answer. Eventually, I headed towards my school. I turned to see if he was still there, but he was gone. As I was walking, I approached the intersection. There was a truck on its side. It must have tipped over while turning the corner. It was a cold, foggy evening when I contacted a close friend of mine to stay at my place for the night. Both of us were only 10 years old at the time, and my parents were often at work until midnight, so I was usually alone with nothing to do except watching a television show or reading a book. My friend Alex had agreed to come over and brought a game of Monopoly to pass some of the time. I also asked if he was interested in going to explore an abandoned subway station 3 miles away. He seemed excited at first, so we planned to go on the trip in the morning. I remembered that the subway dated back to the mid-1920s and became abandoned in 1932 after the market crash in 1929. I was very fascinated about its history, but never got the chance to go inside after my parents had warned me not to enter. As I quietly slept in my bed, I heard what sounded like a gunshot coming from the forest behind the house. Both of us woke up, frightened after what we had heard, and I told my friend not to worry, as hunters tend to go into the forest on frequent occasions, but when I checked the time, it was 11:39 p.m. This seemed very unusual, as hunters only came into the forest between 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. I looked at Alex and decided to get out of my bed, intending to look through the window and spot for anyone in the forest. The darkness clouded my vision, so I was unable to see anyone in the forest. I turned around and looked at Alex again, when suddenly I heard the front door squeak open. Chills went down my spine.
both of us quietly moved to the bathroom, locked the door, and kept the light off. It was the only safe place in the house. Both of us were terrified as we desperately tried to keep as calm as we could. We heard footsteps getting louder and louder until they stopped in front of the bathroom door. And then this is when the most terrifying sound forced my heart to almost burst. Both of us screamed as the person chopped the door to pieces. It was pitch black inside the room, making it hard to find the vent, and by the time I spotted the vent, the person behind the door had made a hole big enough for us to see him. The man adorned black leather and was wearing a plague doctor mask. I scurried back to the vent, but it was too high above the floor for us to reach it, so Alex told me to go first because he was the strongest. He lifted me up on his shoulders, allowing me to open the vent and crawl inside. When I looked at the door again, the man had managed to fit his arm through the hole and reached for the lock. I quickly grabbed Alex's hand, but struggled to pull him up into the vent.
Alex!
I shouted, and began going after him. I pursued the figure until I was led to the abandoned subway deep within the forest. It was chilly and foggy, meaning that I could only see objects within a range of 5 or 6 yards. Inside the subway was a pool of freezing cold water. It was so dark that I couldn't see anything. I had to rely on listening to the screams from Alex and track the source. As I slowly walked through the subway, I was now struggling to breathe under the intense stress and fear of the situation.
Alex!
I called, but there was no response. I continued walking through the water until the exit was no longer visible. I was now experiencing a massive panic attack. I had lost track of Alex. I had no idea where I was or how to get out. Where are you, Alex? Back when I was in college, me and my best friend Miko heard a rumor that her dormitory was haunted. I didn't encounter anything in the 2 years of staying there, so I was skeptical. I could see why the rumor started. Our dorm was kind of creepy, and Miko was convinced it was true. One day, I placed a hot cup of coffee in the sink and said,
"If this cup magically empties itself by the time we get back from school, I'll believe you."
"Deal. Want to bet on it?"
"Come on, you won't bet on it because you know you'll lose."
When I arrived home, I noticed Miko was asleep. It seemed quite weird as he would normally be playing games or cooking in the kitchen. I put my bag on the table and noticed the cup in the sink.
"I knew it,"
I said to myself. I started to pour the coffee away when my phone vibrated.
"Why are you calling me?"
I thought perhaps he left his phone at school. I answered.
"Hello?" "Hey, just eat without me tonight if you're hungry. I'm still at the store getting food supplies for next week. I grabbed some coffee, I noticed we're almost out. Oh, and I tried looking for that green sauce you put in your homemade burgers. No luck, though." "But, wait, another checkout just opened. I'll cook tonight. I shouldn't be too long. See ya."
I was confused. My eyes darted around the room as I tried to gather my thoughts. That's when I realized something. I was too freaked out at this point.
"No! No!"
"Hey, I hope you're hungry." "Oh.
This happened in 2009. We would fly from our home state in California to Minnesota to visit my father's family for the summer. I've always enjoyed it there because of the nature and peaceful atmosphere. My father's family lived far from the nearest town, and he only had two neighbors. My only friend there was a girl who lived next door. Let's call her Morgan. She's around my age, and me, my sister, and her would always play from sunrise to sunset. One day at around 4 p.m., we were outside playing badminton. My sister hit the birdie too hard, and it landed in the next-door neighbor's yard. Morgan said she had more inside her house and went to get them. I felt uncomfortable leaving it there, so I told my sister I'll go get it myself. She told me not to do it and just wait for Morgan. While my sister was fixing the net, I decided to run and get it real quick. As I was about to enter the gate, my sister grabbed me from behind and began telling me how much of a bad idea it was. That's when an old man came out from behind the house. He picked up the birdie and said,
"Is this yours?"
I said yes and asked if I could have it back. He said he had his grandchildren's old toys upstairs and asked if we wanted to have them. Me and my sister were very young at the time, and we thought as he lived so close and he looked like a typical sweet grandfather, what's the worst that could happen? So we agreed and entered through the back door. The first thing I noticed was the stench. It smelled of damp and rotting food. I shrugged it off at the time since he was old. Maybe he lived alone. We heard Morgan calling our names, and we politely told the old man that we had to go and maybe we'd return tomorrow. Morgan saw us through the window and immediately asked what we were doing there. I answered,
"The sweet old man."
And she cut me off and said that the house was abandoned since she moved there. I thought she was just playing around with me and told her to cut it out. She had a blank expression, and that's when I knew that she was serious. We never told anyone because we didn't want to cause any trouble. But now that I'm older, I wonder if it was some ghost or creepy old man luring kids into that house. The house got demolished recently, which is why I wanted to share this story. So this story takes place when I was about 16 years old. At my school, I played for the volleyball team, and every year we would go to a camp and do volunteer work for this guy. The camp was in the middle of nowhere. When we got to the camp, we immediately started to work until 8 p.m. This was around October, so it was already dark at 8. My two friends and I were sitting around the fire, trying to figure out something we could do so we weren't so bored. We heard that there was a small river down the hill from the camp, and we thought we could check it out. The problem is that it was some guy's property, and the owner of the camp told us to not disturb him since the guy was a little strange. We weren't really supposed to leave the camp, but being 16 years old, we loved breaking the rules. We walked about 10 minutes from the camp and finally reached the river. It was bigger than we expected, and there was a large wooden bridge that crossed it. The bridge was about 20 feet long and was big enough to let a truck go over it. My two friends and I decided to go under the bridge and check it out. As we were walking by the shoreline, we saw two headlights off in the distance moving towards the bridge, so we bolted underneath it and hid. We then heard the truck roll over our heads and to the other side. My friends and I chilled there for a while, just talking and throwing rocks in the water. It was about 8:30 at this time, and now it was pretty much pitch black. That's when we started to hear a slow rumble in the distance. The same truck had come back, and this time it was moving much slower. We stayed put under the bridge, stifling our laughter. Eventually, the truck moved over the bridge, but rather than going over to the other side, the truck stopped right on top of us. The only thing you could hear was the rushing water and the hum of the engine. Then, the door of the truck swung open, and out came a loud thump on top of the bridge. Then we heard a loud scream saying,
"I know you're out there! I'm gonna find you!"
I looked at my friends and they were both shaking in fear. This must have been the crazy property owner, and he seemed pissed that we were on his land. He started screaming and saying he was gonna hurt us if he finds us. We could see that he had a flashlight and was swinging it around looking for us. We heard loud thumps as he walked around a little bit, calling out for us, and thank God he never went under the bridge. Eventually, it went silent, and it sounded as if he went back into his truck. I was too terrified to move. We sat there for about 10 minutes, and then my one friend, who we'll call Trevor, whispered in my ear, saying that we have to go. I gave him a quick nod, and in slow motion, we moved out from under the bridge. We started to army crawl on the shoreline of the river, and I remember looking behind me to see the top of the bridge. I saw a white Ford F-150. In the driver's seat was the man, staring right at me with a sinister smile, and he even gave me a little wave. At that moment, I screamed and ran. My friend saw me run and took off after me. I could hear screaming from behind us. I took a quick glance behind me and saw that he was chasing after us, and I couldn't quite make out the object in his hand, but it seems to be a weapon of some sort. We ran into the forest and ducked behind a bush. It was pitch black in the forest, and we couldn't hear a thing. We sat there for a while, just shaking. The man never walked by us, and we never heard him. After we gathered our courage, we got up and walked back to camp, got into our tents, and tried to fall asleep. The next morning, we talked to the camp owner about the man that owned the property of the river. The camp owner said that he didn't know much about the man, but he knows that he has some mental problems and he'd been accused of assault. I am so happy that we were able to escape from underneath the bridge. I can't imagine what would have happened if he caught us. My name is Josh Roberts, and it's been a year since I was abducted. I remember it like it was yesterday. I was walking home from school. It was about 6 p.m., and there was a full moon and a chill in the air. I stepped off the bus, and for the first time, someone else got off with me. I'd never seen this new kid at school before. I could hear footsteps behind me. I took a quick glance and saw the kid walking at a brisk pace. I thought he was following me, so I took a left, which wasn't my usual route. I looked around again and saw him take the same left. My heart started pumping and my legs started shaking at the sound of the footsteps as they got louder and faster. I then panicked and started running. I remembered a shortcut in the nearby forest to my neighborhood, so I ran as fast as my legs could carry me.
"Hey kid, wait up!"
said a heavy voice from behind me. I tried my hardest not to stumble on the logs and boulders in my path. I could hear the sound of sticks and leaves being broken by some fast, heavy footsteps. My legs started throbbing as the adrenaline wore off, so I took a detour towards a playground. I stopped to catch my breath, looking around for somewhere to hide. Then it went silent. I was doubtful that I lost him. I took my phone out to call the police when I spotted a local news article.
"Caution. There is a suspicious man on the loose. He escaped the local prison and assaulted an officer. Beware. He may look like a teen, but he is in his 20s. If you see him, call 911 immediately and lock your door."
My mind started rushing with thoughts, and I started to panic. All of a sudden, someone started choking me with their arm. I tried to fight back, but they were so strong, I didn't stand a chance. My feelings of hope began to diminish as I slowly blacked out. I awoke to find myself in a dark, damp room that looked like a basement. The floor was hard and cold. There were no windows, but there was a staircase and a bathroom. I tried to move, but I was tied up with a thick rope.
"Yeah, I got him. How much was the deal? 200?
"Listen, you gotta do a little better than that." "Okay. Fine. You'd better bring the right amount,
or you'll be tied up like that kid."
"What? Are they selling me?" The guy sounded mad and anxious with whomever he was talking to. Right after he hung up, he opened the door and walked down the stairs with an evil smile.
"Let go of me!"
I exclaimed as he taunted me. My arms started to fall asleep due to the tightness of the rope. He came closer to me, and I spat in his face. He looked at me in sheer rage. Then the doorbell rang, followed by pounding on the door. The guy grabbed some tape and shut me up before I could scream for help. He slowly backed off, signaling me to keep quiet, and ran towards the front door. I looked around, trying to see what I could use to untie these ropes. I spotted a rusty, sharp edge sticking out of the wall. This was my one hope. I successfully got up and tried with all my might to reach it. As I was trying to cut the rope from my hands, I could hear the commotion upstairs getting heated. I managed to free myself from the ropes when I heard the front door slam. The silence was terrifying. I was frozen in fear. Footsteps started coming towards the door. I choked and shuffled back to my original position, arms behind my back, wrists tightly locked together. "Now where were we?" said the man. He walked towards me, grabbed my ankles, and started dragging me when the phone rang. He dropped me instantly and charged upstairs. I wasn't going to lose this opportunity. I untied my feet, grabbed the closest thing to me, and hid behind some boxes. "Now where did you go?" he said as he stampeded down the stairs. I heard him getting closer to where I was hiding. I bolted up from behind the boxes and saw him checking the bathroom. As he walked out, I struck him over the head with a pole. He stumbled and fell to the floor. Crimson red pooled around his head. I ran upstairs and out the front door. I stumbled my way to the closest house, screaming. A woman thankfully opened the door. She was shocked and fearful when she saw me. The police were called and I was rushed into the hospital. They're still looking for that man, even to this day.
Thank you for sticking around to the end of the video. If you would like to support the channel, check out the merch link in the video description.
I was maybe around 13 or 14 years old at the time, and I was recently granted the privilege of staying home alone. Every now and then, when I was home alone, I'd hear sounds coming from upstairs, and so I would instinctively call my mom. She then told me a story of how she used to hear things in her old house all the time, and how it's just the house settling in. Fast forward to many instances of sounds later. I decided that the very next time I was going to be home alone, I was going to be completely silent and make as little noise as possible. Within the first half an hour, there was nothing. Not a peep out of the entire house. I eventually got bored and felt safe, so I went to grab the TV remote to watch some TV. But a few seconds before I grabbed the remote, I heard a huge crash upstairs and running footsteps. I was sure, more than ever, that someone was in fact in the house. By now, there were plenty of consistent sounds coming from upstairs, that it was a fact that someone was upstairs. 14-year-old me decided to hatch a quick plan. Being the skinny, most non-threatening little girl that I was, I first grabbed the kitchen knife. Then, I grabbed the shoe and propped open the front door. And after a few moments of some deep breaths, I yelled out in the deepest voice that I could, "I know you're upstairs. I'm giving you a chance to leave without me calling the police. But I have propped the front door open, and I'll be in the bathroom. Be aware that I'm holding a knife, and if you refuse to leave, I will call the police." Sure enough, I walk into the bathroom with my knife, absolutely scared to death that someone will open the door. I wait and I wait, until the sound that to this day will always scare me for this reason. I heard the front door close and the shoe was moved. I quickly locked the door and turned on the alarm system. I don't know who that was, or what the hell their intentions were, but I hope I never see this person, or ever hear from this person again. This is something that happened to me 3 years ago, and still sticks with me, especially when I'm out at night. I was on my way back home from a late night session at the gym. The gym is right next to my campus, but my flat was on the complete opposite side of the city, so I was definitely making sure that I caught one of the last buses. Otherwise, it was a long, long walk back. I got to the bus stop, and it was empty, except for this one older guy who looked pretty disheveled and out of it. Already, this was setting off alarm bells in my mind. So I stood far away from him and began to wait. The bus tracker said that the next bus wouldn't be here for another 15 minutes. Damn it. Oh well. I put my headphones in and started listening to one of my podcasts to pass the time, all the while making sure that I kept the man within my peripheral vision. And it should be noted at this point that I'm very short. I'm 4 feet 5 inches and about 95 pounds. And I'm used to unwanted attention. And it was against my better judgment that I was even out this late by myself in an unfamiliar part of town. I must have let my guard slip, because I suddenly felt a hand on my shoulder, and the man was standing right next to me, too close. I looked at him, and he was saying something to me, so I took my headphones out to hear him.
You alright there, pal? I was saying I've never seen someone so short before.
He was swaying and grinning at me. I'm alright, thanks.
What bus are you getting?
I did not want to answer that, truthfully. But there were only two buses left to come that night. I said it was the other one, and he looked disappointed.
I've always wanted to meet someone like you.
He stood there, and stared at me for what felt like a whole minute. I felt his eyes all over me. Now I understand what it means to feel like a piece of meat. Eventually, he said,
"Do you have sex?"
I've had some inappropriate questions from strangers before, but that took the biscuit. I should have said it was none of his business, but I find myself saying, "Yes?" uncomfortably. He seemed to contemplate that for a while, amused by the idea.
"What's it like down there? I've always wanted to know."
From his tone, he sounded excited. I took a couple of steps away from him. This time I was more prepared. "That's not really your business." I was thinking about how long the walk would be back home. He was getting the bus I needed. I didn't know where the other bus was going. Was it worth it going through with my lie? I didn't know. I suspected that he would get on the same bus as me, regardless. He took a step closer. This was the moment I actually got scared. He saw me step backwards and didn't care. He knew I was uncomfortable and didn't care.
"I've always wanted to fuck a midget."
That was it. I wish I had said, "Get lost," or "Leave me the fuck alone," or something along those lines. But I was just too scared. I need to go," I blurted out, and walked as briskly as I could without running. And it would take him no effort at all to catch up to me. I pictured him walking behind me with his much longer legs, but I didn't want to look back. I walked for a couple of minutes before I finally glanced back. He was still at the bus stop, but he had moved about 10 feet to stand at the edge of it. I could only see his silhouette against the light of the bus stop, but I could tell that he was watching me. I walked the full hour and a half home, picturing him following me the whole way. And it creeps me out to this day.
one Thursday evening. I was playing Pokemon Go during an event, and like an idiot, I walked into a park by myself in the dark at around 9 p.m. There were a few late night dog walkers and people around when I got there, so I thought it was fine. But by the time I got all the Pokemon in the area, everyone that was around had left, and I was all alone in the dark. So, it was about then when I was like, okay, I'm gonna get murdered out here. Time to leave. Boy, am I glad I did. As I get halfway towards the parking area of the park, and the exit of the park, a suspicious car with tinted black windows drives past me full speed. He enters the car park, turns around at the dead end of the car park, and then drives back past me again. I was a little spooked because I'm very aware of how easy of a victim I am right now. But maybe they were just lost. As I continue walking and catching Pokemon while I walk, the car drives past three more times. There is nothing down on this road except the car park, the park and myself. And it's dark. So, now I'm thoroughly spooked. The fourth and fifth time they drive past, they slow right down next to me, and then zoom off again and rounded a corner. Realizing what was happening, in a moment of sheer panic, I ran to a nearby parked car, dove underneath it, and laid still. Lo and behold, the same car comes back around and slows down in the exact spot where I was seconds prior. Moments later, a door opens, and a terrifying, sketchy-looking man gets out. There could have been more than one person in that car, but I didn't see them. He walks around for a bit, seemingly looking for someone. There was a heart-stopping moment where he walks in the direction of the car that I was underneath and stops right next to me. If I had reached out, I could touch his boots. I could hear his heavy breathing. Now I was sure that he'd look down and find me under the car. I closed my eyes, held my breath, and was almost in tears. What felt like 30 minutes, but probably another minute or so, goes by, and suddenly, he seemed to have given up on whatever he was looking for, swears and gets back into his truck, but doesn't drive off, and the car sits there. And that's when I heard at least two male voices arguing and saying things like,
"He was here."
Another couple of minutes passed by when I heard the tires screeching and driving off faster than before. I laid under that car for a while, terrified they'd come back. About another 10 minutes passed by when I finally gathered enough courage to get out underneath this car and then run back home along a well-lit road. Anyway, I've definitely learned not to wander around by myself at night anymore, and never to play Pokemon Go alone. I have no idea who that guy in the car was or what he wanted, but creepy car guy, I hope we never meet again. This story is told from the perspective of a female. My sophomore year of college, I matched with this guy on Tinder. He sent me a message, and I was just getting weird vibes. My parents raised me to be smart, so I saw red flags right away, and immediately took screenshots of our chat and his profile, and then unmatched with him. He was asking me if I would drive to this motel 15 miles away for a hookup, which was kind of a bizarre thing for anyone my age at that time to be requesting, especially in an urban area. His tag said that he was 3 miles away from my current location at the time, so it was weird that he wanted to meet somewhere further than both of our locations. So, now that I had unmatched him, I expected to continue in my merry old way. But day after day, I kept feeling this uneasiness about the whole thing, like, You know, one of those gut feeling intuition things that told me something was wrong. A couple of weeks passed after unmatching with the guy, and I was just scrolling through Facebook, and I saw something that made my stomach drop. You know how Facebook automatically plays videos one after the other? I had been watching some cooking video, and the next thing that popped up was a video about a missing person, and a photo of him, the guy that I had matched with on Tinder. The same photos that I had seen on Tinder. Anyway, I had screenshots and gave what I knew to his hometown PD. I didn't get a follow-up, but I was young and truly believed that I had done my part. The weird part in all of this was that I had matched with him after he went missing. It's been years, and I still think about it. I know there are many explanations for what happened. And believe me, I've gone through them. His belongings were found on the side of the road. There were items missing, but his phone wasn't listed as one of them. His remains were found a long time later at a lake quite a ways away from where his belongings were. The coroner's report said that he passed of natural causes. I don't know how to explain what happened. My best guess is that someone was using his photos for a fake Tinder account. Sometimes I worry, though, if something else had happened to him. And there's a part of me that wonders if maybe he was taken, and someone was using his profile from his phone to lure girls. But then again, I'm sure the cops must have had ways to ping his phone to find his location, if that were the case. And I'm probably just overthinking. One late afternoon Saturday, I decided I needed to go to the mall. It was a stressful week at work, so I thought some retail therapy would definitely help. It was late in the day, and by the time I got there, the mall was starting to get empty, and there were hardly any people around. I shopped for the typical lady stuff like makeup, lingerie, and cute outfits, and before I knew it, I'd spent plenty of time at the mall, and it was time to head home. I started walking out towards the exit of the mall, and I decided that I needed to use the restroom. The restrooms were close-ish to the exit of the mall, so I wasn't wasting any more time at the mall. The restrooms were at the end of a very large and wide corridor. I made my way through the corridor, no issues, and approached the ladies' bathroom. The sign on the door said it was still open, and so I entered the women's restrooms. They were your typical mall type, with lots of stalls. And at first, it was honestly sketchy looking, and dirty. And I just felt downright creeped out. It felt like a trap. The stalls near the entrance were dirty with water, and toilet paper everywhere, so I made my way down to the end of the restrooms where it was a bit cleaner. Anyhow, I entered one of the stalls, sat down to, well, you know, and then I heard someone enter the restrooms after me. I didn't see anyone down the corridor on my way here, so it was a little weird, but hey, this is a public bathroom. Then, the person decided to use the stall next to mine. I could see from the gap on the floor, between the wall of the stall and the floor, lots of movement from someone's shadow. I wasn't sure if they were getting changed or not, so I didn't pay much attention at first. But it felt like the shadow was coming from above at some point, and the person was clearly not using the toilet. I was really concerned with the amount of movement, but I tried my best to ignore it. After maybe the third time, I decided to look up, and to my absolute horror, I could see a man's face with the creepiest, most bone-chilling smile looking down at me, filming me with his phone. I instantly shouted out, "What the fuck, you pervert?" And in a moment of sheer shock and disbelief, this all very quickly turned to fear as I got up and leapt out of the stall and was greeted by an empty bathroom. Not one person was in sight, and the stalls were open and empty except the one next to mine, I ran for the restroom exit, but it was locked. Luckily, it had a twist lock that I could turn, and as I did, I heard a stall door open from behind me, but I didn't wait around to see him come out. As I was exiting the bathroom, I noticed the sign on the door had changed to "closed for maintenance." This sign was definitely not there when I went in. I screamed some more, shouting to get anyone's attention as I ran down the corridor towards the exit. But the mall was empty at this point. I booked it out of the mall without stopping. I didn't tell this story to anyone until now, not even my parents. It was a chilling experience for me, and I hope no one else goes through that. In the summer before my senior year in college, my little brother, always interested in military stuff, had gotten a pair of night vision goggles for his birthday, and he'd left them at my apartment. One night, I was bored and decided to go try out the goggles at a wooded hiking area nature preserve nearby. In retrospect, this seems like a very stupid idea since I was all by myself and female, but I was young and stupid, and got myself all excited at the possibility of seeing deer and other woodland creatures in their natural nighttime habitat. I was familiar with these woods. My best friend and I had hiked there before at night, and we'd never run into anyone else. Our area is mostly rural and pretty safe, so I didn't anticipate any trouble. I parked in the little sparsely lit parking area, ignored the sign, "Park closes at 10, and entered the woods, night vision goggles in hand. It was a half moon that night, and that was the only light that filtered down through the canopy of trees. It was pretty dark, and I didn't want to put on the goggles until I'd found a place to sit down. So I lit my way with the mini mag light on my keychain. A couple of times I thought I heard a little rustling in the woods a fair distance away, but it was nothing out of the ordinary, and I put it down to animal activity. Hopefully the deer that I'd come hoping to see. After I'd hiked in a fair distance, I found a fallen log to sit on and put on the goggles. I don't know if you've ever used night vision goggles before, but the effect is impressive. They can turn near pitch darkness into bright as day, and everything appears in shades of green, but quite bright and clear. For a while, I had a blast looking around from my fallen log vantage point. Some chipmunks played around in the leaves nearby, and a big owl blinked its lamplight eyes at me from a tree branch. No deer, though, and I started to think that maybe they wouldn't be likely to come anywhere near me, darkness or no, if I sat right out in the open on a log. So I decided to find a place where I could be a little more hidden. I made my way a little deeper into the woods and finally found a huge tree, perfect for climbing. I've always loved climbing trees, so it was nothing for me to hoist myself up a few branches and settle in to wait for my deer. I didn't get to see any. What I did see, though, lit up in bright night vision green after about 10 minutes of waiting, was this. A man, dressed head to toe in dark colored clothing, making his way stealthily through the woods. He was coming from the same direction I'd come and was clearly trying to stay hidden, moving from tree to tree and glancing around carefully before moving on again. It looked very much like he was looking for someone. It took me a few moments to notice that he was carrying something, and when I saw what it was, the hairs on the back of my neck stood up. He had a knife, a big one, and he was gripping it as if he expected to use it in the very near future. It wasn't deer hunting season, and this was a nature preserve, where hunting of any kind was prohibited. And at any rate, the guy was alone and not dressed like a hunter. There was no deer in sight, and very few hunters kill their prey with knives. I was suddenly horribly aware of my situation. A young woman alone, weaponless, in the middle of the woods at night. This was the 90s, so no cell phones, and even if I had had one, I wouldn't have felt safe using it lest I drew his attention. I didn't know how he was able to see so well in the dark. I guess his eyes had just adjusted, and I was terrified he would look up and see me. I sat there, afraid to move, afraid to breathe,
and watched him as he continued his methodical and stealthy process of scanning the forest for who or whatever the hell he was stalking. I scanned around but couldn't see anyone else, even from my high vantage point, and the sickening thought struck me that he might be looking for me. I remembered the rustling noises that I'd heard in the woods when I first arrived, and then I thought back further and remembered something else, a white car that had followed too close behind me for most of my drive to the nature preserve. I'd been annoyed a little and freaked out at the time, but when I turned into the nature preserve parking area, the white car had passed me and driven on its own, and I hadn't thought anything more of it. Now, I wondered, horrified, if this was the driver of that car. If he'd circled back and seen my parked car, alone in the lot. If he'd come in after me. I sat, paralyzed with fear, and watched the man for what felt like forever, but was probably another half an hour or so. There was a heart-stopping moment when he paused right underneath my tree, and I was sure that he was going to look up and find me, but he didn't. After a while, he seemed to give up on whatever plan he had in mind. I heard him say, "Fuck it," and he started heading back in the direction he'd come, the direction of the parking area. I stayed in the tree, wet with sweat and crying, until the sun came up a few hours later. Then I climbed down and, still terrified, gripping the little can of pepper spray on my keychain, I made my way as fast as I could to the parking lot. The man had been there. My windshield had been smashed with a rock, and someone had scraped all down the sides of the car with something sharp, presumably a giant knife that I'm lucky didn't end up in my chest. Thank God for the night vision goggles that let me see him before he could see me, and thank God for big trees with sturdy branches. I hope I never see him again.
The Red Room. Toshi's entire high school had been uneasy for the past month. The string of student suicides throughout the area had set everyone on edge. Though the police hadn't been able to rule in any sort of foul play, it was suspicious and utterly terrifying, to say the least. People around campus had started saying that the suicides were directly linked to a cursed pop-up that would appear whenever anyone would look into the incidents online. Toshi had always been heavily skeptical of these sorts of things, and the rumors fascinated him. So that evening, he decided that he would try to find anything he could regarding this cursed pop-up. He sat at his computer for hours, searching for anything even remotely related. However, he couldn't find anything. It was just when he was about to give up and shut his computer down for the night when it happened. A small red pop-up jumped on his screen. Through the speakers, he heard a soft, childlike voice ask,
"Anata wa suki desu ka?"
Or the incomplete question, "Do you like?" This startled him, so he tried to exit out of it. However, it just reopened. He tried again, and it popped up once more. He began to get frustrated, so he started rapidly clicking the X button. That's when he noticed it. The text on the screen was changing. Each time he clicked to close the ad, the words would expand a tiny bit more, revealing something hidden in between. He continued clicking, slowly watching the full sentence unravel in front of him. He felt the room grow cold as the pop-up opened one last time, now completing the sentence.
Anata wa akai heya ga suki desu ka?
Do you like the red room? His screen was soon flooded bright red, and a list of names ran through it. To his horror, he recognized the names as the students who had committed suicide earlier that month. His eyes scanned quickly down the list, his pulse quickening all the while. Suddenly, He released a gasp as his eyes fell upon his best friend's name at the end of the list. Just then, Toshi's arms became covered in goosebumps. Frozen in place, he felt cold breath on the back of his neck.
This particular event happened almost a year ago, sometime in mid-October. A couple of friends and I drove out to visit an old friend of ours from high school, George, who now lived about an hour out of the city. We spent the whole day with him, and it was really late when we finally decided to start the drive back home. My friend Lisa was passed out in the passenger seat. She'd had a few drinks and decided to spend the ride home asleep. My other friend Sam was sitting in the back seat behind Lisa and was playing a game on her smartphone. I, of course, was driving. I was following the GPS's instructions back to the freeway. At that moment, we were driving down a dark street with thick trees bordering both sides. Everything was pretty peaceful, with the only sounds that I could hear being that of the car moving along the road and the radio on low volume. Suddenly, my car let out a loud jolt, and it felt as if I had hit something. Sam let out a shocked scream, while Lisa remained dead asleep. I slammed on the brakes and the car came to a halt. I was breathing heavily when I asked what the hell had just happened. Sam peered through the back window and gasped. She turned to me with an angry look on her face and shouted that I had just hit a dog. I looked through the back window and sure enough, a dog was laying in the road a few yards behind the car. Sam is a pretty big animal lover, so I wasn't surprised to see her get pissed at me. She was about to open her door and rush to the animal's aid when I stopped her. Once I had gone over the shock of running over a dog, I got a feeling in my gut that told me that something was off. I'm no braggart, but I consider myself a very attentive and safe driver. My eyes were on the road at all times, and I distinctly remember not seeing any dog in the road prior to the car jolting. Yes, it was dark, but I was sure that I would have at least seen the dog in the headlight before hitting it. I looked through the back window and took a closer look at the dog, or at least as much as I could make out in the reddish light coming from my taillight. It was a fairly big dog, and at least a golden retriever or something like that. One particular detail caught my attention. I could see the dog's tail wagging. Now, I'm no expert in the mannerisms of animals, but I was sure the last thing a dog would do after being hit by a car would be to wag its tail. After a moment of thought, I pressed my foot down on the accelerator and sped off. Sam snapped at me and ordered me to go back, but I told her that something was wrong with the whole situation. She continued to argue, but she fell silent as she turned back towards the back window. She asked, "What the heck?" with a shaken voice. I looked in the rearview mirror. Though it was dark, I was able to make out the silhouettes of three large figures emerging from the trees on the side of the road. The dog was now up on its feet and jumping around joyfully. The three figures looked in our direction as I pressed my foot down on the gas harder and sped off. Sam and I remained silent for the rest of the ride home. It wasn't until a few days later that we would tell Lisa about it. We've been back to visit George a few times since then, but we always make sure to leave before sunset. Still, I dread to think about what would have happened if we had gone out of the car.
Okay, y'all, that is my time. I just want to say thank y'all for tuning in. I hope everybody had a safe Halloween. I hope y'all enjoy these 31 days of horror, because I definitely enjoy bringing them to y'all and being the entertaining factor in y'all's month of October. Now, if you're not following me already on here, make sure you follow me, because the month of November is going to be epic. And not epic in a way to where, you know, it's just going to be something just explosive. But it's going to be something that I haven't seen done, that I've been wanting to do for a while. And hopefully y'all join in and tune in with me in doing so. But before I get out of here, I'm going to leave y'all with the thought of the night. And my thought of the night is this. If all else fails when you're doing something that you're putting your all into, make sure you step correct. Because even if you make a mistake, at least you know that you gave it your all, you did your best, and that you have an opportunity to try, and try again. With that being said, love, peace, and blessings. Pray before you lay. I love y'all, and good night.
Darkness falls across the land. The midnight hour is close at hand. Creatures crawl in search of blood to terrorize your neighborhood. And whosoever shall be found without the soul for getting down must stand and face the hounds of hell and rot inside a corpse's shell. The demons squeal in sheer delight. It's you they sigh, so plump, so right. For though the groove is hard to beat, yet still you stand with frozen feet. You try to run, you try to scream, but no more sun you'll ever see. For evil reaches from the crypt to crush you in its icy grip. The foulest stench is in the air, the funk of 40,000 years, and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver, for no mere mortal can resist the evil of the thriller. Can you dig it? Ha 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 ha